He did not like shoes. He ran free in the field. What were these things? He did not like them on his feet. So Ida May let him go barefoot. Miss Theeny stood watching. One by one, her children had left her and gone up north. Sam and Cleve to Ohio, Josie to Syracuse, Irene to Milwaukee. Now the man Miss Theeny had tried to keep Ida May from marrying in the first place was taking her away, too. Miss Theeny had no choice but to accept it and let Ida May and the grandchildren go for good. Miss Theeny drew them close to her, as she always did, whenever anyone was leaving. She had them bow their heads. She whispered a prayer that her daughter and her daughter's family be protected on the long journey ahead in the Jim Crow car. "May the Lord be the first one in the car," she prayed, "and the last out." When the time had come, Ida May and little James and Velma and all that they could carry were loaded into a brother-in-law's truck, and the three of them went to meet Ida May's husband at the train depot in Okolona for the night ride out of the bottom land. 2. Wildwood, Florida, April 14th, 1945. George Swanson Starling. A man named Roscoe Colton gave little George Starling a ride in his pickup truck to the train station in Wildwood through the fruit-bearing scrubland of central Florida. And Schoolboy, as the toothless orange pickers mockingly called him, boarded the Silver Meteor, pointing north. A railing divided the stairs onto the train, one side of the railing for white passengers, the other for colored, so the soles of their shoes would not touch the same stair. He boarded on the colored side of the railing, a final reminder from the place of his birth of the absurdity of the world he was leaving. He was getting out alive, so he didn't let it bother him. "I got on the car where they told me to get on," he said years later. He hadn't had time to bid farewell to everyone he wanted to. He stopped to say goodbye to Rachel Jackson, who owned a little cafe up on what they called the Avenue, and the few others he could safely get to in the little time he had. He figured everybody in Egypttown, the colored section of Eustis, probably knew he was leaving before he had climbed onto the train, small as the town was, and as much as people talked. It was a clear afternoon in the middle of April. He folded his tall frame into the hard surface of the seat, his knees knocking against the seat back in front of him. He was packed into the Jim Crow car, where the railroad stored the luggage, when the train pulled away at last. He was on the run, and he wouldn't rest easy until he was out of range of Lake County, beyond the reach of the grove owners whose invisible laws he had broken. The train rumbled past the forest of citrus trees that he had climbed since he was a boy, and that he had tried to wrestle some dignity out of, and for a time had. They could have their trees. He wasn't going to lose his life over them. He had come close enough as it was. He had lived up to his family's accidental surname, Starling, distant cousin to the mockingbird. He had spoken up about what he had seen in the world he was born into, like the starling that sang Mozart's own music back to him, or the starling out of Shakespeare that tormented the king by speaking the name of Mortimer. Only George was paying the price for tormenting the ruling class that owned the citrus groves. There was no place in the Jim Crow South for a colored starling like him. He didn't know what he would do once he got to New York, or what his life would be. He didn't know how long it would take before he could send for Inez. His wife was mad right now, but she'd get over it once he got her there. At least that's what he told himself. He turned his face to the north and sat with his back to Florida. Leaving as he did, he figured he would never set foot in Eustis again for as long as he lived. And as he settled in for the 23-hour train ride up the coast of the Atlantic, he had no desire to have anything to do with the town he grew up in, the state of Florida, or the South as a whole, for that matter. 3. Monroe, Louisiana, Easter Monday, April 6th, 1953. Robert Joseph Pershing Foster.